Actually, it was his second race off the layoff that he ran well. But when a horse is fresh, they ought to have a lot of their speed with them.
Okay.
I don't like it when they've been off a long time, and now I'm gonna suggest something to you that's almost blasphemy, and it actually is, because people overplay it to an extreme. There are certain trainers that can do that. If you're prepared to find out who they are, you can bet their layoff horses. Otherwise, I would suggest you just don't bet those layoff horses, especially if they come back at a lot lower level. On the other hand, if the horse comes back at the same level it was at, it was competitive all the time at that level, you can give a look to that. You can rate them and bet it if the workout line is present. The bottom line to all of that is that if you're the trainer and you have the horse and you think, well, this horse is still really worth something, I think he's as good as he was before. He was running for 25 and 20. I'll put him in for 20 today. That's a positive sign on your part as a trainer. On the other hand, if he's running very well at 20 and 25 and he brings him back at 10, guess what you have? You got something wrong. You really have something wrong. And there are just a lot that goes with that. And probably that would be a better discussion in one of our subsequent sessions. But that's how I approach it. I just don't like to see. I mean, what are these horses used for? They're earning tools, aren't they? Well, you can't earn unless they're running all the time. I mean, some of these guys, some of them do, especially in New York. But some of these guys would run them every couple of days if they could, as long as they'll stand the racing. And so when the horses aren't running and aren't earning, if they're claiming races. Now, really good horses, you have to look at it from a different point of view. I mean, really good horses, you don't want to overrun. You don't want to empty the well. But with these claiming horses, you want to just drain them. You want to get every nickel out of them. So, and those are, that's where most of your bets are going to be anyway. So look at it that way. If the horse is back in 7, 8, 9 days, that's a very positive sign. It's a sign that the trainer says, well, nothing wrong with this guy. I might as well run him right back. Unfortunately, the condition book and the population of horses gets in the way a little bit, so you can't get them in every 9 or 10 days, even when you want to. That's the reason that's probably the reason that you're at a 28-day to 30-day probability on these horses. Because, they're just not getting into some of these races. One last point. This is a negative in your contender selection. Sometimes you have to go back and revise it. This is item G on contender selection. This is the habitual trailer. When you're selecting your contenders, there are certain horses that you can almost always throw out. Sometimes, unfortunately, you have to go back and add them in, but that's only as a last resort. And those are horses that are always last or next to last at the first call, sprints and routes, always. Now, occasionally you'll find one that develops a decent win percentage and you kind of treat him as an exception. But nine out of every 10 of those that you see are culls and are not contenders in the race. Now, what happens, though, occasionally, is that you find a race that the entire early pace scenario is gone, like the first race yesterday. Although Hand Secret doesn't fit this category. Because if you look at him, he's had speed off and on throughout his career. And he did come from out of it to win the race. But occasionally, you'll look at a race like that, just the way we did earlier, throw out Naguna Native, throw out Color Guard, which is almost the entire early pace scenario of this particular race. And once you've done that, there are times when you look at the pressers and find that none of those are in form either. And you throw away that scenario. Then you look at closers, and you look at two kinds of closers. One kind of closer is a horse that runs from behind, makes a move in the second fraction, and goes ahead with that. Now, that's a positive closer. That's a legitimate closer. But horses that habitually trail at the first fraction, and especially if they don't contend at the second, throughout the turn time fraction of the race, those are almost automatic eliminations. And if you're betting those kinds, and even including them as your contender, first of all, they won't come up on your numbers anyway, just because of that very late first fraction. There aren't that many of them, but virtually every claiming race has got one. Okay, that you can look at and get rid of. And get rid of them. Don't be embracing them. Because they'll come up with one of your higher sustained ratings and they don't deserve it. Okay. Even on a heavily sustained racetrack, not many of those win. But you can tell that. You can look through the horse's past performance and see if the horse occasionally gets up. It just happens to be a freak. But most of the time, you're best served by eliminating that kind of horse right up front, almost arbitrarily. If you have to go back, if you finish the scenario and you decide no one can win, then you open up the race and go back into it a little bit. That's what we would have done if we were handicapping this first race yesterday. The minute we threw away those two betting choices, we'd have gone back in and opened this race up a lot more than we did. Now, with the contender guidelines that we talked about, you'll find that they're reasonable. You can extend them a little bit in as much as you have horses that you decide need a drop in class. It's a serious drop in class. And the horse has maybe been splitting the field in some of these other races. In other words, we say up close to 3 lengths, right? Well, you may have a horse that's up 4 or 5 lengths behind all the way through the race. And in other words, it's just running in the middle of the pack and it's not being disgraced, right? You can get pretty soft on that guideline then because the horse is at least beating half the field. Does that make sense? Because that's an exception you have to make, because sometimes those will beat you and you look at them and say, well, you know, if I hadn't applied this religiously, and I'm suggesting you don't apply any of this religiously, almost none of it. The positive class drop versus the negative class drop, I suggest you apply it religiously. But as far as that's concerned, if you find a horse splitting the field, beating half the higher level and dropping not one, but more than one level, because if one level drop, if you look at your part-time chart, there's almost no drop. It's one level is a length, right? If the horse is being beaten 10 lengths, what's one length going to do for you? A two-level drop, though, improves the pace characteristics of the horse and everything else because the pace in the race itself is weaker. So if a horse is making a couple of level drops and has been splitting the field, go ahead and give it a little consideration over and above these guidelines that I gave you. They work most of the time, but you have to make room for exceptions. No one ever said this is an exact science because it's really not. Now, does everyone understand this last exception? Does anybody have any problem with that? It's not double talk, it's just you have to make some exceptions, but you have to make exceptions where you know you can make them. Pace lines. There were a couple of questions at lunch, before we do get to pace lines, there were a couple of questions at lunch around this negative versus positive class drop. Several people tried to do it and look at some races and then found when we weren't doing it as a group, some of those class calls became a little tougher. Do you want to go over a few more of those before we go on? You do, okay. Because there'll be some relatively easy calls to make here. Using Friday's form still, because I don't want to use Saturdays until we go to some examples later on. Then we'll kind of do it together fresh. So look at Friday. Go to the fifth race. Take a look at, we'll just go through that, and take a look at Prince Sauce, first of all. Now this one's really obvious, okay? So you know, recognize this pattern if none other. Take a look at this pattern on this horse. Is this a positive or a negative drop? It's an extremely negative drop. The horse obviously needs a drop, but it probably needs a drop all the way down to $2,000 claiming. Look at what they paid for this horse. If any time you're in doubt, look at what they paid for this horse 3 races ago. $40,000. Since then they've earned zero. And the horse drops in for 16. That is extremely negative. Because of the dollar amount that's going to be lost here, that's horrible. They'll recover part. If the horse had won yesterday, they'd have recovered part of it. But not enough to make this at all a positive drop. It's not. Take a look at Hidden Bounty for just a moment. Take a look at her races on February 10th. March 17th, do not look at her last race. Take a look at those two races, on 25 and 25. Now, based on those two races, should that horse have been dropped? Absolutely. Now, it's up to you as a handicapper to decide whether or not it should have been dropped all the way to 12.5 or not. That's a major drop. But the horse definitely should have taken a drop. And they almost won, so it was the right drop. Whoever made the drop made the right drop. I think Nickerson had this horse. But anyway, they made the right drop with the horse. It's a little steep, but it definitely needed a drop. So the drop itself is positive, then you have to decide whether or not it's too big a drop. Okay? When they make a major drop like that, there's a decision that's made that I can't make for you because it varies each time. It depends on how they're doing it, what time of year. At the end of a meeting, you see drops like that. Rather than carry the horse over to another circuit, it's just another subject. That horse needed a drop. Sue for Libel. Skip it. That doesn't... go to B-Brush. Look at the race on February 24th. February 24th, it gets beat a length and a quarter, running fifth at four horses in front of it, was a contender, made a good move, then it dropped to 20, right? That's a positive drop, isn't it? It had four horses in front of it. It's a very slight drop dollar-wise. It's going to catch a little easier field. That's a positive drop on that horse. Okay, now let's take a look at it again. The drop in its last start from 25 to 16. What is that? 25 down to 16. That's two levels, but I mean, what is it? A positive drop or a negative drop? Well, it's a little bit of both, but you can't throw it out on a negative drop. It's a little bit of both. I mean, the drop should have been to 20, shouldn't it? Okay, but maybe there wasn't a $20,000 race, so it's 16. Definitely required a drop. You just have to gauge as to whether or not two levels is too much. Two levels, they definitely wanted to win. That's why they were willing to drop that. Okay. Had it dropped, let's take a look at this for just a moment. The race on March 7th, suppose there was not a claim there, and draw a line through the race on March 17th. Now, based on the race on March 7th, for $20,000, should that horse have dropped off that particular race? No, it should not. That would be a negative drop because of the near miss at the higher level, you don't drop them. You don't take a lesser amount. That's a little bit negative there because you just don't drop a horse that's running that well. But there's a race in between, so you got to make another judgment in there. There's some good examples in the seventh race. Perfectly Tailored, the two-horse drops in class today. Is it required? I'll give you a chance to catch up. What do you think? It's the best thing they could have done with it, right? Best thing they could have done was drop that horse. Probably going to drop it again and again, too. But, I mean, that's what you have to do with a horse like that. The maiden 32 win the race before is as low as it gets. So that's like saying the horse won a $6,000 claiming race. That's about what the par is for that maiden 32. So the horse definitely needed a drop. Look at Rash Decision. Is this a nice drop from 25 to 20 off of its previous race? Bingo, right? It's beaten six lengths. It ran good. Beat a number of horses in the race. To drop the horse is no surprise. The horse, you know, with a little easier competition, the horse is probably going to run. It did win, as a matter of fact. It won after they scratched several horses, too. But that was a positive drop. Now look at your piece line. This horse was scratched out of this race. Look at that drop. Now there's two points involved here. First of all, does the horse need the drop? Yes. Is the drop all the way to 20 off of a race in which it finished fourth at 50 a positive or a negative? That's the key analysis here. Horse needs a drop, obviously. But this, I mean, after running fourth at 50, two races ago, you would think at $32,000 horse ought to fit really well. What do? They drop it all the way to 20. Now, something you should know about three-year-olds is that at this time of year in Southern California, $20,000 is like a $10,000 claiming race. These are three-year-olds. It's like a $10,000 claiming race. It's the bottom of the barrel. They don't drop any lower than this right now. As the year goes along, they begin to drop those three-year-olds a little bit more as they become more and more classified. But right now, they can't drop them anymore. So this is like dropping a horse to 10. And the drop would be from like 25 down to 10 is the equivalent drop. So it's really a negative on your piece line. Now, this horse was scratched, so we don't know how it turned out. It's really a negative race. Look at Syncor. That's a positive drop, right? It was no threat. Even it ran third, but it was no threat at all to win its last race, even though it ran third. So probably needs a little easier company. Now here's a negative. Swing Time Gal, look at this horse. Look at the drop. Two races ago, this horse ran second, beaten only two lengths, at 40. Then it ran pretty decent in a mile, was still in the race after the 6 furlong mark at 40. And it drops all the way to 20, the absolute bottom of the barrel. Now this horse was 3-2 halfway through the betting and wound up being second choice when they bet Rash Decision down, which is where the money should have gone. People wised up to this. I mean, the drop is just too much. It just shouldn't be made like that. That's a negative drop. Toby Ann, look at her recent races. She looks like a horse badly in need of a drop. She improved greatly on the drop yesterday. Now, in her next start, you might want to, possibly you could bet her at 20, because she obviously found the right level, because she ran a good second in there. But she needs a drop, see it? Nothing negative about that drop at all. Princess of Ice. She may drop off the face of the earth.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with her drops because she can't compete before. There's a lot wrong in terms of the contender selection guidelines and her form. We would make her a non-contender based on how she's running. But as far as the drop itself is concerned, you would not throw her out because it's a negative drop. It's not. She obviously requires some kind of a drop. And Muy Alegre, who did not run also, here's a great example for you. Look at her race on December 2nd up at Bay Meadows. Now, realizing Bay Meadows is less racing, all right? But she ran very well up there. And then off that race, she's off 6 weeks and drops into a $32,000 claiming race. Now, if that were at Santa Anita, both the races were at Santa Anita, it would be a horrible drop with a young horse. It's still a negative drop here, too, after 6 weeks off following that race that she almost won. She deserves another chance in a non-winner's one, especially as a younger horse, because she wasn't even three then. And then you can see what happened to her. She just continued to drop and dropped again yesterday and was scratched, though. Okay. Is this becoming second nature now? Yes.
As far as you're concerned, on class rises and drops, you don't worry about surface changes or distance ranges. You know, if the race is a 6-furlong sprint and the last few races were drops on the turf, you're not concerned about any of that. You're just looking strictly at the drop.
Yeah. I'm not concerned about that right now. I'm just concerned. I'm concerned about the worth of the horse.
Okay.
Because you can get rid of a lot in claiming races. You can get rid of a lot of horses just based on where they should or shouldn't be, and if they shouldn't be there, you get rid of them. And it's after you finally get it here that you can bet against a 4-to-5 shot that's making the kind of drop you don't want. Once you've successfully beaten that kind of a horse a number of times, then it becomes automatic and you get a lot of confidence in it. First, you have to bite your knuckles and do it, because the horse has all the high ratings, right? You know, a horse that's dropping off of a good race, suppose a horse runs a bang-up second at $20,000, and the next race it's in for $12,500. Well, isn't it going to have all of the top ratings, practically? All of them? Yeah, well. But on the other hand, it's a horrible bet. But once you get used to beating that kind of a horse and put yourself in a right, because that horse will be 4-to-5. People at the racetrack are unbelievable. Some of them are experienced players, and they're really poor players. Okay. Any other questions about the class drop? Yes.
You mentioned once in one of the other sessions that something about the turf. There were so few turf races that the class really didn't mean as much as it does in
Turf races. Well, it means the class means something, but the claiming price doesn't. In Southern California racing, there was a race yesterday afternoon, ninth race. Wasn't that for $80,000 claiming horses? Isn't that the one? All right. It was on the grass. Well, they don't run $25,000 and $30,000 claiming races on the grass. And so often you will see at Santa Anita, there were a lot of examples of this, often you will see a horse that runs pretty well for 32, for example. In the horse's next start, it's in an $80,000 turf race. Don't throw the horse out, because there was no other place to put it. And most of the horses it's competing with, if they move back onto the dirt, would be back at 32 also. The claiming price in these turf races is extremely inflated. So a horse that drops in class is an illusion. A horse comes out of an $80,000 turf race and moves onto the dirt and he's in for 32, it's an illusion. Both ways, up and down. On the other hand, if the horse ran very well in that turf race at 80, shouldn't be dropped back into the dirt and at that lower level. But the class rise itself is inconsequential. Any other questions about the, yes?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm really trying to say is you don't get too arbitrary. That's the reason I introduced a qualifier to the up-close guidelines. And that was the horse that was, in the thick of the race, the halfway point, right? Half of the field. Sometimes the lengths are a little back. But the horse nevertheless was beating half the field, was probably finishing all right, if you look at the third fraction and things like that. Well, you can't throw those horses out just arbitrarily, and I don't want you to do that. And especially once you've disqualified the horses at the public's betting, like in the first race yesterday, Hand Secret, and the other two, well, Hand Secret was taking a 50% drop in class. But he became a logical contender when you threw away the horses that that were being bet. He was a logical contender, as were several others. Okay. I don't want to kill us. Everybody finished with this topic now? Yes. We'll tackle that in a second session. Okay. Right. I toss it. I eliminate any betting possibility at all for me. I just won't touch it. Very seldom. At the, I'll give you a statistic because we're kind of proud of it. When Quinn and I did that series of seminars, race day, for a while there, we were tracking I was tracking the horses that we said not to bet, period. Whether we had a good winning day or not, I mean, it didn't matter. The horses we said do not bet. Of the first 34, 2-1. And they were both short prices. Of the other 34, 32 of them lost. And they were mostly this kind of a situation. Horses that just defied logic, should not be there, should be at a higher level, or should be on a different surface or something like that. So the point is, they don't get burned very often. Not at all. And we wouldn't have gotten burned yesterday. I mean, the Swing Time Gal was there were co-favorites in the seventh race. Whether you bet, the one that wound up with the favorite was that Rash Decision. Whether you bet her or not was unimportant. As long as you threw out Swing Time Gal, and the other one we decided was negative also. And in the first race, didn't matter whether you won the race or not, it's whether or not you played against Laguna Native and Color Guard. That's the real issue here. And if you're making that call right, you're going to be right often enough on your bet, and the short prices are with the horses you're throwing out, so you're going to come out well there. Okay. Pace length. I've mentioned before the importance of the last race. It is the best indicator of where the horse is right now, and you got to pay attention to it. When we do our examples a little later, we'll analyze some of the last races that we're looking at in terms of how important it is to this horse's form cycle. But right now, all I'm saying is that you pay attention to the last race, but what I'm also saying is you do not necessarily use that last race as your pace line selection. A couple of guidelines that you kind of have to adhere to here. One of them is that the pace line you select ought to represent the probable performance or style of the horse that you're looking at. In other words, if you've got 10 races available to you that might represent that horse's probability in this race, and one race the horse was up on the lead, and the other 9 the horse was well behind, which pace lines do you get in? Do you choose here? You choose the one that they normally run, right? And just because a horse ran up toward the lead one time, when you have 9 other races that say the horse will not run to the lead, then you pick a pace line from the other 9. I pick my pace lines almost always from a current form cycle. In other words, if the horse is off 9 or 10 months and has clearly been out of training, not just freshened for 6 or 8 weeks or so, where they're still being trained a little bit, just not as hard, but when they've clearly been out of training, after the first race or so back, I can find my pace line selection generally to the current form cycle. Because you may not have the same horse that you had before. And often when you look at them now, they're running for 10. If you go back to the previous form cycle, they might have been running for 20. That's a bad pace line choice. I like what Michael Pozzola has to say, and I'm gonna advocate that now. And that is, he says that there is a window open on each of these horses, depending on the excuses and the performance in the last race, the previous race, and so on back. And what he contends, and I agree with him, is that if you start with the last race, and if you can substantiate, and not because, but if you can substantiate going beyond the last race for anything, for class reasons, and I don't mean one level here, we're talking about more than one level, because a one-level class change doesn't improve or decline a horse that much. But if it's 2 levels and the horse did not perform well, that's a legitimate excuse. So now you can go to the previous line. If the previous line has what you consider to be a legitimate excuse, then you can go to the line below that. And you can continue to do that within the confines of the current form cycle until you strike a line that you can't excuse. And it may be the last race, but it might be 1, 2, or 3 down below that. Once you've done that, it's fair game to take any of those lines that represent the horse's running ability or style. As an example, the eighth race yesterday. Look at Mr. McHugh, top horse. Look at its last race, June 17 and 89. Then look at its other races. If you made this horse a contender, which race, which pace line would you use? All right, it's not current, but it's the last race, isn't it? Look at Soft Shoe Shot. Soft Shoe Sure Shot. Look at that horse for a minute. Its last race, let's take just a moment. There's a layoff involved on this horse, or at least a freshening period on this horse, right? And obviously the horse needed it, because if you look at the two races prior to that, the February 12th race, first thing I do with this, incidentally, is just draw a couple of squiggly lines above the February 12th. That indicates to me that you're dealing with a kind of a different condition or form cycle on the horse. So you don't want to take its previous line, especially since it was on the wrong surface, but it also caused the trainer to decide to rest the horse for almost 3 months. That's not a good pace line selection. The previous race, in which it obviously went off form because it followed that up on February 12th, is not a good race to use if you make this horse a contender. It's not representative of the horse's running style or normal condition. Can you see that all right? So if you make this horse a contender in a race, it's fair game then to go to the December 6th or November 5th race, whichever one, or even beyond that. December 6th is about as far back as I'd go. That's what I did for the horse yesterday. That's representative of his normal style. The fractions are representative of the races he was mostly in. I wouldn't overly, if you make him a contender, then don't overly penalize him with his last race or the one that obviously took him off form. So as far as this is concerned, since he's a layoff horse, there's kind of an open window on him if you make him a contender. That's the key here. If you don't make him a contender, there's no window at all. Look at Yes, I'm Blue. Now, if his last, on the race on February 24th, he's had some time off since that race also. Prior to that, he'd had time off since April. But his last race is very good, and it represents the kind of, the run he normally makes. And without going back into his very early three-year-old season, and even back into his two-year-old season, if you count the December 29th race, the last race is representative, I think it's representative of this horse. Now, he may be better, obviously he is better than that, because he won by 9 yesterday or something like that. But nevertheless, that is the that's the pace line here. But you're current, and you don't get too, I mean, there's no reason to go beyond that race. Now, if it had been a bad race and you're making a contender, then because it was following a long layoff, then you can open the window a little further. Yes?
Back up there to Slam Dunk.
Sure.
Sure Shot.
Okay.
Why would you make him a contender on his form on the other two races? Just by his workouts, work pattern down there, or why would you say he was coming back in the form?
Okay. All right. First of all, you understand that this is not a claiming horse. Okay, so this is a horse they still have some hopes for. They drop him into a claiming race. His last race, apparently he just didn't take to the surface. But more important than that, the race before that is when he seems to have gone off form. So if you take those two races, neither one of them will make him rateable at all. It won't give any indication of his talent at all. The previous race was Hollywood Park. It was over this surface. Soft Shoe Sure Shot. It's 6.5 furlongs over this surface. And it still represents... It represents his current form cycle, mainly because he hasn't been out of training. He hadn't been out long enough to have been completely wound down and brought back to a race. He was given some time off, but there's a difference there. So you're still in the current form cycle in that horse. And that's the representative race. Now, if you choose not to make him a contender, it doesn't matter. And that...
One January race was just the race in class.
No. What I'm saying in his one January race is that the race on December 6th, whatever happened in that race, he didn't come out of it well. Now, if he were dropped into a claiming race today, I got to tell you, I wouldn't have made him a contender.